in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any weather you will see a spiky grin. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's the happiest day of the year again.
Yeah, it's a little bit more happy when you haven't traded away your first round draft pick, but it's still pretty exciting to get three new players.
I know, and look, we'll go through them. And look, the absence of the first round draft pick did twinge. I mean, it's the first time since 2003 that we haven't had one, so we're not used to the experience. But I think we've had a reasonable draft, even in the absence of a top pick.
Well, for nerds like us, it's often actually the later picks you get most excited about, because it's the, you can talk yourself into the myth of the, it's a steal. No one expected him to be available this late, but it's always nice when you have a high pick, you pick a kid that everyone's talking about, that all the media have written stories about. So, you know, obviously we didn't get this year, but, you know, for draft nerds such as ourselves, I still, you know, I normally, my favorite draft pick is some kid picked in the 50s, and it's going to be that way. It's going to be that way this year again. So, you know, I haven't lost my chance to project my dreams and hope on getting a Smokey that will be an All Australian in 5 years.
All right, so we've had three national draft picks. We're recording.
Nick, just before you go into that, we should mention at the end of this podcast, for a first time ever, Richmond are going to enter board election debate, and we'll be interviewing board candidate Simon Wallace after we've discussed the draft prospects. And yeah, as you were saying, Nick?
I'm looking forward to that. We've interviewed a whole range of different people on this show, but yeah, never someone running for the board. Should be fun.
Exactly.
So we had three national draft picks. We're recording this on the Sunday before the Monday of the rookie draft, so at the end of this interview, I'll leave you with a couple of names who I'm keen on for the rookie draft. But we got three guys: Shai Bolton, Jack Graham, and Ryan Garthwaite. Where do you want to start, Andrew? Which one's taken your fancy?
Well, firstly, credit to you. You gave me two names to watch before the start of the draft, and one of them we drafted. So well done. I think we should go in sequential order. All right.
Well, this is a pretty fun pick. Shai Bolton. Some people talked about him as potentially the most exciting player in the draft, and he's got a bag of tricks. He's a really good athlete. He's 2.95 in the over 20 meters, which is elite. Very good agility. He's small. That a lovely picture of that Daniel Rioli had flown over to Perth to meet him, and he's shorter than Daniel Rioli, which is pretty small.
Yep.
He's light. He's 67 kilos, which is
he's young.
He's young. Yes, he's second youngest player drafted. So he's still a 17-year-old. But geez, exciting! Like He's one of these guys that, you know, if he was consistent in with what he did, he'd be a top five pick. But, gee, he had some exciting moments, and he's well suited to a YouTube package of, you know, picking out his five best moments from the game.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you said, and we'll come back to his highlights, because I have a particularly self-indulgent reference that I wanted to run past you.
Bring it.
You know, he's interesting because all that you say is true, but, you know, the obvious comparison is the speedy forward pocket with tricks. The obvious comparison is with, Rioli. And the thing is, even though he was a later draft pick, you can actually, he has a much better body of work at juniors. You know, he was at times quite an important player for the Western Australian team in the championships and, you know, the, playing Div 1 football. He's, he has a reasonable body of work and he has done some really interesting things on the football field. In some ways, I find him prima facie before playing a game of football, a more exciting prospect than Rioli, despite being a relatively later pick, because just because of some of his junior production. And, you know, frankly, Rioli's highlight reel was amazing, but there was not very many acts on it, whereas...
Rioli did come on towards the end of the year. Both of them did really well at the
Actually, they both did. Yeah.
Both did well at the end-of-year All-Star game. Yeah, Rioli had an amazing draft camp, like testing for both speed and endurance, whereas Bolton's tested at a 13-1 beep test, which is it's actually pretty much the same as Lids when he was drafted. So it's fine, but it's not good. So that's definitely something to work on. But it is interesting. As you said, sort of it's easy to think of him as a forward pocket. But in that All-Star game at the end of the year where he played really well in a team full of guys that was drafted high, he played on the wing and he ran up and down the wing in at Punt Road looking pretty darn good.
Yeah, there was this weird stat in Champion Data saying that he won 50% of his ball contested, but the some of the other stats...
Which is a lot.
It is, but I don't think that's... I think that may have been a misprint because actually... At the champs, I've read a different thing that at the champs he had a very low outside player contested ball rate. And if you actually watch him play, from what we've seen on the Richmond side and the other ones, his value is getting the hand pass on the outside and then puts on the afterburners and he's gone. And
well,
his tricks, obviously.
It's that and the monster sidestep. Like he's got a sidestep that an NFL running back would be pleased with.
Well, yeah, I mean. I don't think any 220-pound man can sidestep like that, but but yeah, he's not. I mean, he's got the afterburners. He's got the outside speed, and here's the most. You talk about tricks, and I heard I heard someone say it before us. A recruiter was quoted as saying that he's done things that he's never seen anyone ever do before. And there are at least two moments on the highlights package on the Richmond RFC. One, which is that incredible sidestep, which you've already mentioned, which he then slotted for a goal. There was another one where he's gathering a loose ball, he's under pressure, and he chooses to do a behind-the-back hand pass, which led to a goal, which I've genuinely never seen anyone even try in training. And, you know, as you know, I've seen some fairly skillful footballers in training, and... and smart-assy players, and it reminded me of the stories of the legend of Allen Iverson before he got drafted. playing street ball in New York, and how he'd just do things that no one could believe that it was just so incredible. And if he was a point guard, because that's the position he would have played in basketball, he would have done some incredible things playing street ball. So he's and that, have, that having he, tricks. Sorry, Gunny.
I was just going to say, yeah, he's got tricks. He's an explosive athlete. Like there's a few moments where if he's kicking on the run, he can clear 55 meters on the run with his kick quite easily. Like he's a, you know, the classic fast twitch athlete.
Yeah, and he's a really interesting player, and the having those fancy tricks now, he's probably not going to do too many behind-the-back hand passes at AFL level, but it's a sign that he has he has an ability to do the unexpected and the amazing that leads to goals.
He doesn't mind flying for the occasional specky as well.
Yeah, and, you know, how he projects in the AFL and how he works with Rioli in real life will be interesting. I think maybe 10 years ago you don't have two of those kind of guys on the same team, but... In modern AFL, it seems like you can't have too many of them.
Hawthorn play three smalls.
I didn't. His kicking is strange.
I wanted to talk about the ball drop. The ball drop's funny. I mean, this is not the not the last discussion about ball drop that we're going to have in this show, but
no, it's a big deal with all three of them. Particularly
the third one.
First and third. The second one I'm going to defend a bit.
But there's something.
It's really, you know, he goes wide and he sort of swings wide. But if you look actually his ball, some of the arcs his ball takes through the air, I've almost sort of never seen before, because he slots them at times. He looks like he's slicing, but he actually slots goals from the corner, the boundary line, which it's almost impossible to slot it from if you're slicing. So it was sort of, I just noticed they were doing a few of his long kicks that bounced through for goals took really weird bounces, which suggests that they were taking funny rotations. So it'll be really interesting to watch him, to sit down and really watch him.
I think they're gonna want to try and clean that up a bit and get it a bit more consistent.
Yeah, and a bit straighter. He did. There was a few kicks were a bit Rhys Conker like, and he was leaning back away from the kick. So anyway. Well, wait and see, but that, I didn't love his kicking. I actually went back and went through his junior, his games in the AFL Carnival, under-18s Carnival, to see what his goal kicking was like, to see how accurate he was, because it worried me because of his kicking motion, but he didn't have enough shots to really draw any conclusions from it. But I'm just making the point, I was worried enough about it to check what his goal kicking was like.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Look, I doubt he'll play as much football as Rioli did, just because Rioli's now a second year player and probably ahead of him. But I think he could be really good fun in the VFL.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, the head recruiter has come out and said that he may play around well. So we'll see. Mm. I think that's enough on him.
Yep, fair enough. Jack Graham. This was the I can't believe he lasted to our pick.
Yep, my favourite straight away.
Yep. If you looked around the internet on the mock drafts, there were a few people not as keen on him as others, and who had had him pegged going around where we were. But you know, the consensus was sort of early mid 20s was a likely landing spot. He's a really solid footballer. 183 centimetres, 83 kilos, won the Lark medal for the best player at the Div 1 Championship. In the past 10 years, 9 Lark medalists have been first-round draft picks, so that sort of tells you what the calibre of those players is. But I can see both how he managed to dominate at junior football, but I can also see why he wasn't necessarily a first-round draft pick either.
Yeah, so if you had to draft people just based on their stats line from the under-18s Carnival, he would have been a top-10 draft pick. And he's
top-5, yeah.
And a lot of his characteristics are a very high draft pick. Now,
actually, I think his highlights reel that doesn't quite speak to his to his output, actually. In the highlights, there's an awful lot of handballs, whereas, you know, when you look at how he's actually played, he kicks at least as much as he handballs.
Well, I went through the stat line, actually, of some of the games that they were pulling the highlights from, and they have a really weird selection of the highlights. There were games where he got all these clearances from, and all the highlights are of him of getting hand passes in space and then hand passing to someone else. I mean, I can do that. It doesn't get you into the AFL. Yeah, I don't know, and I question sometimes. I think sometimes highlights editors go for the one where the player's clearly identified rather than ones that tell you what the player's.
Good point, because clearances can be hard to capture.
But actually the most important thing of someone like that can do. Anyway, I mean, there are a few other knocks, you know, as you've said to me, does his style of play stand up when he can't be a bully and the other guys are just as big as he is?
He'll get caught with the ball more than he has in junior football. He won't be able to crash through as much, but he'll also get bigger in an AFL weight program as well.
He has had 2 reasonably serious quad injuries, and that's not
a concern. Yep.
So that will knock you down a few draft spots, but I mean, that's why you get someone who's actually very good at football. And I'm sort of disappointed, and I will just call out my fellow internet and media for he's so obviously a money ball player.
Yeah, I know.
Well, like his statistical output is good, but you know, people find reasons to talk themselves out of them.
I know. Well, you said to me after we picked him that there's a bit of Anthony Miles about him, and yeah, that's it's a really good comparison that gets drafted later than he should because people focus on what he doesn't do well rather than what he does very well. One favourite little statistic I saw was that he had 17 tackles in a SANFL reserves game. That's astonishing.
Yeah.
That's about a whole half of Richmond football from this year.
Well, Dimmer's going to have to work him hard to train that kind of those kind of instincts out of him.
I know.
Presumably the after-work training, you know, hour after hour of corralling. And
No, don't go in. Don't go in, Jack. Hold off.
Anyway, I want to talk about his kicking.
Yep.
So doubts about it.
It's not great.
You know what? I don't mind it. Now, you know,
no, it's not bad.
You've played footy with me, and you know my own ball drops are frankly abysmal. So I'm not really the technique king. But he does things which express. There's a few. If you watch him kick a few kicks, the sort of when he's kicking to a leading forward, he drills it really low and hard, which only people who are good kicks do. It's sort of you only attempt these kicks if you're actually a good kick. You know, if you look like someone like Taylor Hunt in the same position, he'll do little pop-up kicks, which are fine. But there are some really good kicks do them to wait people in. But, you know, Taylor Hunt does it because he's his only option, because when you really try and drill a low, hard pass, you're more likely to spray it. And I noticed him going for kicks, for high ambition kicks that suggest to me that functionally he is quite good. And I saw him nail some fairly penetrating kicks as well. So I don't hate his kicking. I know a lot of people have bagged it.
Yeah, it's not great. One issue people have raised is that he's going to have to get better at marking the football to be able to play anywhere other than on the ball, which is an issue. But he does, like all the, his work ethic is something that people talk about a lot. So he's suited to the modern game and the reduced number of interchange. I think he's a depth player, but he's a depth player in an area where we just haven't had much depth seemingly forever, and that we've recruited two inside midfielders, and it was still identified as a clear need before the draft. Tells you, you know, how much we needed someone like him. But yeah, he's also been highlighted as a guy, you know, who could, he does something well, and he could potentially do it next year at senior level if required.
Yeah, he was on the AFL website story about people who can contribute next year. He was one of the very few late draftees. Anyway, I think the bottom line is, his tools aren't exciting, but he can play football.
Yeah, no, really, really happy with this pick. So last one. Further proof of the bounty of GWS. Developing the virgin AFL territory of the Riverina, was that they had so many academy players that they didn't have enough points to bid on all of them. And one of those was Ryan Garthwaite, who we picked up late. And yeah, he's a player with very definite strengths and weaknesses. And I actually like that, you know, he does have a clear weakness, because it explains why he's been drafted late, other than, you know, because if he did have a nice kicking motion, you'd think that, you know, he's got picked in the 70s because he's frankly not very good at football, whereas, you know, he has been a very good junior footballer.
Yeah, so statistically he was the best shutdown defender in the TSC Cup. He's won 9 of 3, so he's not dominant, but he's an extremely good one-on-one player. Actually, the person he reminds me of most is Dylan Grimes.
Oh, absolutely. He's finished top three in the best and fairest for the Murray Bushrangers, who you know have a raft of players drafted high every year. I don't think he's quite as quick as Grimes. But he's quite a big ball winner. He's got 24 disposals in the TAC Cup Grand Final, which is a pretty big effort, and averaged 16 for the year, which Grimes for his strengths doesn't do. And I like that he's a good one-on-one defender, because one of the nice things about Grimes is that if you're caught having to switch men, that he's competitive against big forwards, even though you don't want to isolate him all the time. And I think Arthwaite can do that as well. But he does have a funny ball drop.
He does. So when he decides to kick the ball, he can go away, get a beer, come back, and he'll probably be just reaching his ball by the time he's finished doing that, getting through that awkward ball drop. Look, he makes it work, very helpfully, they included his kicking percentage in the TAC Cup, which is so when he's doing 25-meter chip kicks to open teammates, open he's men. Fine.
He's very reliable. Yeah.
So
is this a step to the future? Now, I listened to a podcast recently about the introduction of the two-handed backhand, and is the two-handed ball drop going to be the way of the future for the AFL?
I doubt it, because it's slow as hell. But if you have 193 centimetres and backman, is maybe the only situation to get away with it. So I could actually see it working. I don't know. There's a question. People who know the mechanics.
I think it can be adequate. It worries me what it's going to look like when he's got Cyril Rioli or some other super fast forward bearing down on him, and he doesn't have a little chip kick to the side.
It's going to look bad. Someone who knows more about kicking mechanics than me pointed out that kind of motion is not good for long kicks, which is a problem because he's a slow kick, and people are going to zone off him very quickly. So that's going to be his problem. He's going to need to. But
the likes of Brandon Ellis are also going to be busting a gut, because they know that there's going to be a cheapy 25-meter kick. And that struck me from his highlights, was that he was someone who was comfortable with his limitations.
Well, actually, I did actually notice in his highlights, as soon as he came anywhere near the ball, the Brandon Ellis player for the Bushrangers ran really hard to space. As you say, he knew what was going to happen next. Maybe it can work. And, if he's got like good depth on his kicks and can spot holes in a zone, he'll be okay too. Hard to tell. Watching junior highlights, so there is a possibility it can work. So
for a late pick position of need, I liked it.
Yeah, that was going to be my last point, that it is a big position of need. He's actually not that many injuries away from playing next year, so
he's going to need some weight.
But it's not inconceivable he'll play football next year.
Not inconceivable. That was all I had on the players we drafted.
Which is your favourite of the three?
I really like Garthwaite, I've got to say. There's things that I like about all three of them. Like Bolton, the potential for a holy hell, how did he do that moment? I like Graham, I'm going to enjoy. If he comes up, he's going to be a ball winning machine, which I like. Garthwaite, I like me a Dower defender. What about
you?
I
like Graham.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, I like the other two. I just like Graham.
Yeah, fair enough. So I think we really need a key forward depth with our. I'm not sure if we're having one or two rookie picks. I've seen both in on social media. There's not a ton of depth in in the big forwards left available. But just three names for you. Zach Sproul, also yet another GWS Academy player I like quite a bit. He'd be my favourite. But two others, Mitch McCarthy, who's been a junior ruckman, but, you know, he's 197 centimetres, I think, or maybe even 195, so he's going to have to play key position. And a Western Australian called Brad Fullgrab, which is a fantastic name for a big key forward. But yeah, ones to keep an eye on.
Look forward to it.
Okay, should we do our interview?
We should. I would just like to briefly point out that I'm slightly discombobulated by the fact that number 25 has been given out.
Yeah, but it's been given out to a northern Tasmanian. I was so happy that Tony Nankervis did it, because he's you know, he really does have the potential to be a poor man's Brendan Gale.
Benny wasn't exactly the comparison, but he does. I agree, has the fan favorite potential. But, and I also sort of had to think about myself that Benny wasn't really a good enough player that 20 years after he retired that you're going to worry about his number being given out.
No, I appreciate the amount of care and thought that goes into number allocations. But yeah, I really liked 25. Has always been a big man's number. And yeah,
it's good. We both wore it when we played.
Yep, exactly.
Let's move on to the interview. And welcome back. And Nick and I have just had a quick drinks break, and we've just welcomed Simon Wallace to our conversation. Simon, how are you going?
I am top of the world, guys. If I was any better, I'd be dangerous. And I've got to tell you, it is a real thrill for me to be on this podcast. I've listened to it. When we've been at our top of our game, when you've done emergency celebratory editions, I've also listened to it for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, therapeutic purposes.
Yeah. When I've been just, I craved it. I needed it to get me through from those very dark days from Monday to Thursday after a disappointing loss. But no, I appreciate the opportunity.
You'd actually be surprised the amount of people who say to us amongst our, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans, that their favourite episodes are the ones after a really bad loss.
Yeah, which admittedly it does tend to take us about 4 or 5 days to, you know, mentally process it. Like I think the shortest we once did one about half an hour after a Carlton game, just because we were on top of the world. But yeah, after the losses, it does take a little while to pick yourself up.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good medium too. It feels like a conversation, I've been married to my wife for 11, 12 years, and, you know, she understands my passion, but, you know, sitting down and discussing for an hour and a half just exactly our issues with defensive 50 transition doesn't rank highly in terms of the most romantic things I can suggest. So, yeah, it's...
I'm impressed that you've managed to maintain a relationship despite those obvious shortcomings in your communication skills.
Well, people like our Andy and I are brothers, and sometimes people ask me, "Oh, so what's up with Andy at the moment?" And I'll say, "Well, he's very concerned about our defensive transition, and we're not converting in front of goal." But
for God's sake,
pretty much a mystery.
But for God's sake, don't bring up Dimmer's 3-year extension. But other than that,
or Steve Morris is a forward pocket. Yes. But yeah, I think his work's fine.
Anyway, we've just been talking about the draft, and, you know, unwrapping our three new Christmas presents. Did you have any favourites out of the three new kids?
I was quite enjoying it. I wanted us to keep going. I think there's an element of redundancy in some of the skill set that Bolton seems to bring, but that's great, because if we could get another Dan Rioli, then hooray for that. I think Jack Graham leaps off the page as perhaps having the qualities. I'd probably refer to leadership later in the list than his apparent ability to find it and use it often in the course of a game and really influence the outcomes. You run through a list of recent Lark medalists, and they're a pretty handy bunch. I think Kane Pettifer might have been one of those going back even further than the published last decade, but Kane had his moments too. Yeah, I think Jack Graham, I think I saw a, I might have even posted on Twitter that the South Australian team high performance manager said he's basically a Luke Hodge, but he spreads a lot better. So, I think that's tablespoons of salt to be taken with that assessment. But, you know, they're all champions at this stage. And I sometimes wish draftees were a bit like yearlings. At least yearlings don't know what they cost. But you'd think he's going to get absolutely everything out of himself. And I reckon Trent Cotchin would have been applauding that decision from wherever he is at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and Andy very much liked him as well, and it's a nice pick.
I like his kicking style, even though a lot of people are down on it. I think, you know, he hints to me that he can actually kick in a functional AFL way.
Yeah, and some of the highlights, which are obviously highlights, that there seem to be a good use of the depth kick as well, like not just from point to point, but from point to point hitting a moving target that is running away from the disposer, which I always reckon is a pretty good sign. And even Grathwaite, I'm not entirely sure on the pronunciation just yet, but a lot's been made of his ball drop and so forth. But everyone seems to say, but it does get to where it needs to go. And apparently he spent a bit of time up forward as a junior in 15s and 16s, and his conversion rate was astonishing. Now, maybe they were all Joe the Gooses, but it was like 63 goals, 14 one year, and you know, not dissimilar percentages the following year. So, and I like the fact that he really hates getting beaten.
Yeah, I like that. Look, the very high conversion rate still a sore point for me, because that was one of the things that I deeply loved about Liam McBean, God rest his soul.
Are we mentioning him on the podcast now? Or are we?
Look, the therapy's going really. The therapy's going really well. So yeah, I can say the name now.
Yeah.
Simon.
Nick's actually planning to go on a road trip through country Victoria to watch Liam McBean when he plays in the Golden, you know, Golden Valley League or wherever.
Still a rookie draft, you know. Yeah.
Simon, I must say, I could not help but be impressed by your effort in putting down 14,000 words about why you should be elected to the Richmond board. That's well on the way to being a thesis, and you know, it's fair to say it's a ton more effort than anyone else has put in communicating with members ahead of a board election for as long as I can remember. Sort of talk us through what was the impetus for you in taking this path?
Look, I don't think there was ever a particular trigger. I just started thinking, as we all do, especially the three of us on this podcast at the moment, you just start thinking more and more deeply about where the club is and where it's come from. And I should say at the outset, I'm standing in applause of so many things that have been achieved under the stewardship of the current and recent boards, as well as senior management. But it probably kicked off as an idea in my mind that became running for the board after the Adelaide game earlier this year, which, as you may recall, was about 8 days after the last 32nd loss to Collingwood. That was pretty hard, obviously, but I think we could all rationalize that to some degree by saying that was, you know, almost a freakish set of circumstances that led to that loss. The Adelaide game the following week, I went along, as I sometimes do. Sometimes I like to go to the footy with a bunch, and sometimes I just need to go alone. And I went along alone, and I really watched it closely, and it was in, That was a pretty humiliating loss. There were defensive 50, handovers leading to another Eddie Betts goal over the top and so forth, and we all know what they feel like. And then I went home and I did my own stats. I said, well, how did we get here? Because it was in my mind that Adelaide have had a lot of headwinds, you know, and I went through them, and I mean, they copped bigger draft penalties than Essendon did. They lost a bloke who ended up being, is now captain of GWS, Phil Davis. They lost Bock, who was their All-Australian centre-half back. They lost their best player, Dangerfield, for, you know, clearly below market value. Their coach was tragically and horrifically murdered. And I compared the two sides side by side, and we had about a dozen players taken in the first 20 of a given draft. And I know there are, yeah, that's not a direct comparison given the compromised situations with the expansion clubs. And they had five. We had two players taken after pick 40, and they had 12. Those we were about the same average game, same age, thereabouts. We were playing, inverted commas, at home, albeit at Etihad, which is another gripe, but we won't go there. And I just started to think, on any objective measure, you show those stats without revealing who the teams are, you must say that that team, being us, should win quite comfortably, and we didn't. And so then I just started thinking more and more about, not so necessarily just on field stuff, because I'm very reticent about portraying myself as one, any form of an expert, although I'm obviously a strong fan in the football area, but also other areas of the club that spoke to me as being concerning. One of them was the jumper, and jump in here anytime you'd like.
On the jumper issue, let's just take it as given that we are on board.
On board, yeah. And then, you know, the constitution of the board itself. I'm a member of the Tommy Hafey Club, and I really enjoy the functions very much. I love going along and hearing about the wonderful times in the 70s and so forth. And I have the grainy footage on YouTube to convince me that they ever happened. And a lot of the board members, pretty much all of them, have contemporary, will have memories of our greatness in their autonomous lives. And I envied them incredibly. My experience and those of our vintage is quite different to those who currently occupy the board. And I feel that our board should be more reflective of its membership. It's not. And so it's not just an age thing. It's a perspective thing. And like any leadership groups, I think there should be a blend of perspectives and experiences. I'm not saying I want it more than they do, but I think I want it differently. Last 35 years, and let's not go through them year by year, have been really hard, really hard. And so, I wouldn't swap my experience for anyone's, but I feel that sort of experience.
Well, Andy, before you jump in, just as someone who loves the draft profoundly, we're 2 years away from potentially drafting someone who wasn't born the last time we won a final.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. So Simon, I'm going to put you on the spot in a second about what you personally bring. You know, as a listener of the show, I'm like-minded with you a lot on the on-field, some of your on-field analysis. But one thing I did like that you brought to my attention, that I wasn't aware of previously was, the composition of the board and how few of the board members had been elected.
Our current board, which now numbers 10, including the executive director, Brendan Gale, one of those first joined the board as a result of an election. Now, if people don't stand, and some of those have been casual appointments filled to replace others who have retired, then if people don't stand, then they are re-elected as a matter of course. And in some ways, you could say they have been tacitly endorsed by members by the fact that no one has chosen to oppose them. But one of the directors now, Rex Chadwick, first joined as a result of an election. Now, I think there's a bit of a misconception in AFL land, and perhaps particularly Richmond, that elections are particularly divisive or destabilising. I don't take that view, and I frankly hold the Richmond membership in a little higher regard than suspecting that they would vote in someone who wasn't exhibiting a desire to be constructive. I don't think scrutiny by members, and remembering we are a member club, is anything to be feared. And I think even if I am unsuccessful, and that is a very real possibility, even if I'm unsuccessful, I think a constructive and well-conducted election, as I think we're having, is a healthy thing for a club. Already, and perhaps it's a coincidence, but already we're seeing information flow out of board level, largely via the president, increasing significantly in just the last couple of months. The focus on Footy Mob, who were tripping over their own shoelaces on day one, I certainly don't align myself with them in any way, and I didn't support the way they were going about it. But I do understand them. I understand where they probably came from. They were probably sitting around a table and saying, "Gee whiz, this is not disappointing. This is really hurting. What can we do?" When they decided on that course of action, if I am successful, I'll be but one voice in a room of 10. And we'll have obviously very limited powers to affect change myself. But over the medium term, I'd like to think I could steer us in a direction that that perhaps we haven't considered in the past.
So why are you, Simon? What's I mean, most people who run for the board are fairly successful, talented people, and you know, you're no exception. But what makes you amongst a crowd of successful, talented people? What do you bring to the board that's special or different?
Well, one thing that this process has already shown me is that, if anything, I've underestimated the depth of emotional investment that Richmond members have in their club. I've received a lot of correspondence, a lot, and very little of it has been brief. A lot of it has been hundreds and hundreds of words of people telling me their story before they get to saying I'll support you, which is to date invariably been the case, which is great. Why me? It's a good time for me. I'll be a decade younger than anyone else on the board. Presuming, well, if the constitutional changes get up, I'd have a maximum of 9 years in any event. But I think I've developed a skill set now. But well, not only being a lawyer, and hooray, lawyers, but you know,
and our president is a lawyer.
Indeed, and one of the incumbents up for re-election is a lawyer. But you know, lawyers are critical thinkers. They're paid to create and present and assess arguments. I also happen to be a director of an ASX listed, which brings with it significant compliance obligations. The company of which I'm currently a director is not a large company, which means the disclosure obligations when you're monitoring annual profit guidance to within an amount of $100,000 over the course of 12 months means you really have to be on your game in terms of assessing almost every line item within a business and assessing its impact on the business overall. In terms of what makes me special, increasingly I'm of the view that I'm more similar to more Richmond fans than I believed, but I think I now have confidence in myself that probably I didn't have, you know, to take this step a few years ago, having served on an ASX listed board, a number of other representative organisations, and I feel I can. It might be something of a of a cliche, but I do genuinely think I can add something. That the prospectus of which we've already spoken, yeah, you know, I wouldn't say it was a stream of consciousness, but I did a lot of research justify my views, but it almost did write itself. You know, it's a core competency, thinking and talking and discussing how Richmond could be better. Now, as you say, that probably doesn't distinguish me from tens of thousands of other members, but unless I stumble into the annual general meeting of the Collingwood Cheer Squad, I don't generally walk into a room thinking I'm the smartest person here, but I'm also no dill, And I realise that board meetings aren't an opportunity for 10 people to sit around watching highlights of the week before and then drilling the coach as to why we don't play Jack in the goal square. You know, I have an opinion on that, but anyway. It's also complex, dry, important, and sometimes very public work. And, I'm quite familiar with that.
So, Simon, I mean, one of the reasons, aside from your very well-articulated position on Richmond, I think that there is quite a lot of interest in your campaign is, and there's quite a lot of debate going on, is there's quite a lot of dissatisfaction amongst certain parts of the Richmond membership. And, you know, funnily enough, it's an electorate that's slightly annoyed with the current elites. Stop me if you've heard this before. But when you get in there and, you know, you're surrounded by very smart, capable people who are making very sensible recommendations, sort of what stops you from being, if people are seeing you as a sort of sensible change agent, what stops you from being captured by the same thinking that captured some of the other board members?
Well, I'd like to think that I would be captured by that thinking quite often, because I think on many issues I'm likely to be on a unity ticket. I think it's terrific that we're diversifying our business into, although I don't know the financials of it, into fitness centres and so forth. But yeah, I've taken a pretty clear position on a number of discrete issues. Pokies is one of them. I also happen to believe in them, so I don't think I'm going to forget them. I'm not running on a ticket, so I don't need to retain a party line, as it were, amongst a group of people whose views may change over time. I'm not a tree climber, so I'm looking to be Peggy or whoever the president is in future. I'm looking to be a lieutenant, not a general. I think I can raise my voice, and I use that not to say I'll be shouting, but ensure my voice is heard in a manner that, over time, perhaps not immediately, but over time we'll see a reprioritisation of certain things that I regard as bordering on sacred. How can I say that I won't be captured by whatever the Richmond boardroom looks like and staring up at the team of the century photo and things like that? Only that I don't see this as an ego trip. I'm not going, if I am successful, I'm not hoping to fill up my autograph book in the first week. I'm not, don't think I'd become doughy-eyed at a player knowing me by my first name. Our deliverables, although our finances are of primary importance in terms of a board's responsibilities, our deliverable is 2.5 hours every week during footy season. And I fully accept that level of accountability. I've even noted in my prospectus that, regardless of the constitutional changes, if we haven't won a flag within my first two terms, I won't seek a third. Now, that may be overstating the impact that one person can have on, the outcome of a competitive game of sport. But if I'm part of a group that is choosing and assessing the people who choose and assess the people who play, and after 6 years with, I think it's fair to say, some generational players at our disposal, numbering more than three or four, I would regard that not necessarily as a failure, but as a trigger to give someone else an opportunity.
You could have, if you wanted a more narrow time frame, you could have picked not win a final while Alex Rance is still playing for us, but... I digress. Anyway, Simon. So thank you, Simon. There's much more, we could debate, and I'd love to hear, your views on a few other topics, but, I think we've covered, the core points of your campaign quite well. And, Richmond Tiger Talk has never taken a position before on a board election, but we, and try to remain neutral, but we certainly support the intelligent and thoughtful way that you've gone about this election, and I'm certainly myself personally look very favourably on the way you've engaged all members. So thank you for your time, Simon.
Well, I appreciate that. And look, heaven forbid that we become a club where people don't stand up, to be honest. This year was very difficult, and for that matter, our failure to progress beyond the first week of finals, the three before that, wasn't disappointing. It was totally unacceptable. When I see, you know, Paul Roos being given a standing ovation by the Melbourne membership for taking them to the giddy heights of 11th, all while he's being paid by Melbourne's fiscal wet nurse in the AFL, I don't want to be that club. Yeah, heaven forbid we just shrug our shoulders and say, yep, that's our lot, that's about right. And I would just hope that people vote. If they think that, you know, I'm a complete goose and I'm just not up to the job, absolutely fine. I won't take it personally, and I won't know how you vote, but this is all pretty important to us, the Tigers, and so I'd like everyone to vote in any way they choose. But yeah, I'm happy that now everyone has full information on which to base their decision.
Thank you, Simon.
Pleasure. Thanks, guys.